All right. So today on this episode of Life Unscripted, we have Joe Hawley. Joe, welcome to the show, my man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Yeah. So we're actually recording this one live in person at my pad, kind of connected with Joe. He ended up being a neighbor's guest across the street from my house, and his man van dog blog intrigued me. So
yeah, you saw the van out there.
I saw the van out there, and I was like,
pretty dope van.
Yeah. And I saw that. I was like, all right, I got to check this guy out. Who is he? So yeah, you played in the NFL for 7 years.
8 years.
8 years.
Yes. 8 long years. I was drafted in 2010, fourth round by the Atlanta Falcons. Played there for 5 years. Kind of had an up and down career. It was a real grind. Ended up getting cut my 5th year because I blew my knee out and I didn't recover as well as they would have liked. As the business kind of goes, they let me go. And then I knew one of the coaches down in Tampa Bay, so they picked me up for my final 3 years, which ended up being a huge blessing. And then I ended up walking away and retiring in 2017, which is a year and a half ago, and decided to buy a van, hit the road, and kind of experience my freedom for the first time.
Yeah.
I played football for 16 years.
Basically. You know, how old were you when you started?
14. Or 13.
13?
12 or 13. It was freshman year of high school.
Okay.
And most people start when they're even younger than that. But I didn't end up playing until I was in high school. And I remember it was like halfway through my first year. I really didn't know what I was doing. And I was always kind of an athlete growing up, but I never really found what stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And halfway through my first year, I remember grabbing onto this guy we were playing against. I drove him like 50 yards downfield, like kind of like blindside. I don't know if you've seen that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I drove him onto his back, into the ground, and it like felt so good to like just kind of like dominate someone like that. And I was like, that's how you play football. Like, I love this. And like that, from that point on, I was like, this is what I want to do. And it kind of took off.
So what did you start to do? Did you start to train all year round? How'd that work for you?
It's kind of a process. So, you know, looking back on it now where I'm at, like, I am so grateful and proud of myself for having lived a kid's dream.
Yeah.
You know, I think back then, obviously, there's a lot of kids with that dream. And, you know, so when I first sparked and had that love for the game, I think the first step is, okay, I want to, you know, play varsity, right?
Yeah.
I want to be good on a good high school football team. And then I started working really hard at that. And then, like, halfway through my junior year, started playing against, I was on varsity starting, and my coach came up to me, he's like, you have a chance to earn a scholarship. Like, you have good feet. And that was the first time anybody's really believed in me in anything. And like that kind of really lit a fire under me, like, wow, I can really do this. And he believed in me, pushed me. So then going into my senior year, I started getting scholarships coming in. And so like that next process was going to college and then learning and growing and playing and becoming a starter in college. And then I ended up going to UNLV in Las Vegas. I got a lot of scholarships to a lot of different schools, some bigger schools, but the bigger schools weren't really recruiting me.
Mm-hmm.
And UNLV, the O-line coach, was like my area recruiting me, and he was awesome. And he recruited like me hard, like called me once a week. And, like, all these other schools weren't really doing this, and he told me how I had a chance to play right away. And I didn't want to sit out for a couple of years. Like, voting on, I had a scholarship to Wisconsin, but they have some big boys up there, and I know I wouldn't have been playing for probably at least 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been sitting on the bench. So I went to UNLV, which is a smaller school, ended up playing as a true freshman when I was 17, and worked my way up, and it was a smaller school. So then the next step after that was like, okay, like, obviously there's a lot of people on my team that want to go to the NFL, but out of UNLV, there's maybe one guy a year that goes. And, you know, like, I have a lot of friends now that played at like Alabama, and, you know, they have 15 guys a year going like first round. It's crazy. So I was just working towards that. And my senior year, I finally, you know, the big next step would be getting invited to the combine, which is where, you know, everybody goes to kind of audition. And I think there's around maybe 300 people that go to that. And my coach was like, you know, it's a long shot that you get invited. When I got that invite in the mail, it was like this big step for me because I wasn't projected to be drafted. I was going to be a college free agent, and ended up getting an opportunity, which was a really big deal, so that I could showcase like my athleticism and how smart I was, and, you know, the intangible stuff that you don't really see on film.
Yeah.
Playing at a small school, ended up going to the combine and, you know, showed out, impressed a couple teams, and ended up getting drafted in the 4th round.
What kind of nerves, right, come up when you're, I mean, that's a big thing to go and perform in front of all the NFL teams, all the cameras, ESPN, I mean, you got it all there. Like, what kind of nerves and like training did you mentally have to prep with?
Yeah, the combine is really difficult because you train for a few months on these drills, like these physical drills. Like, that's the big thing you see on SportsCenter and NFL Network is, you know, the 40, the three cone drill. And so you work so hard on trying to master those. But then when you go to the combine, you have all this like anxiety and stress.
Yeah.
And you're there for 3 days prior to actually doing the workouts. And you're meeting with teams. You're doing like the Wonderlic test, IQ test. They're like poking and prodding you. You're going to like all these different. I probably saw, I don't know, there's only 32 teams. I probably saw 40 doctors. Like, it's crazy. And they're like, you know, I have like loose shoulders.
Yeah.
And so they're like pulling my shoulders in and out, my hips in and out. And they're making sure you're like put together well. And all the injuries from college. And anything you've ever had, they check it out multiple times. And then finally, the last day, my flight's at like 1 p.m. I have to wake up at like 6 a.m. to go do these, you know, workouts that I'm already exhausted. And so you're not – and I think they know that you're not at your best shape, but you still have to go out there and perform. It's part of the process of like seeing how you handle all the stress.
Right.
You know, going through what I've learned now, football is – and what a lot of people don't realize is it's one of the hardest things – I've ever had to do. Like, it taught me a lot about pushing my body outside its comfort zone and being able to push through pain. And there's a reason not a lot of people get to do it or have the opportunity, because it is so difficult. And it takes its toll, you know, stress-wise, emotionally, physically. You know, there's always someone trying to take your spot. There's always a younger group of guys coming in every year.
Yeah.
There's only a certain number of spots. The coaches are judging you, the fans, the media, the front office, and you have to basically be at your best all the time or they'll just replace you. It's crazy.
What's some of the like the mental strategies, the mindset strategies that you were taught as, you know, do the combine, get drafted? Like, what are some of the mindset things that were shared with you or maybe that you learned and you applied to help combat all the adversity that comes with the, you know, the media, the fans, the stress?
Yeah, I think it's something you have to learn on your own. I mean, obviously there's older guys that you can kind of learn from and model yourself after and get to know, and they'll share and mentor you, which I like doing as I got older, sharing my lessons with the younger guys. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things that you kind of learn as you go. And if you don't learn the lessons, you're out of the league. And so guys that played, that's why I'm so proud of myself playing 8 years, because it's one thing playing 3 or 4 years.
Right.
But playing that second contract means that you not only got there, but you learned and grew and were able to stay there. And that's the hard part, because there's a lot of first and second rounders I've seen come in and they just don't hack it, can't figure it out, and they're out.
What's the average length of a career?
3.5, 3.3 years, something like that.
Oh, so it's tiny.
Small. Yeah, and it's crazy. You'd be surprised how many people get drafted high and they're out of the league in 3 or 4 years. And the only reason they're in the league so long is because they got drafted high. And so I'll tell you a story about one of my lessons.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
So I go my second year, I end up becoming a starter for the first time. I was playing right guard, which is out of my position. The starting center was like a 13-year vet. And so he's been there a while. And so I was playing right guard because our right guard got hurt. And after we were playing in the playoffs against the Giants the year they ended up winning the Super Bowl in 2011, and I ended up having a pretty bad game. But, you know, I had a pretty good season. And the starting center was set to retire that year, and I was going to – you know, in my head, move over to center, and it was going to be my job. I was going to be the next guy for the next 10 years, you know, like excited about it. So we ended up going into the draft, and I'm watching with all my friends, and that's the year Tony Gonzalez is supposed to retire. So everybody thinks we're going to draft a tight end in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And what we end up doing is drafting center in the first round. And so what that means for me is like, crap, they're obviously not thinking about me taking that spot.
Yeah.
They don't think I'm good enough, so they kind of scapegoated me. So I went, long story short with that, ended up going into the next year, not even dressing. I went from starting to not even dressing. And so I was basically on the sidelines and like barely made the team. And I kind of went into this like, you know, woe is me attitude, victim mentality, mm-hmm. kind of depressed, going home, like drinking a lot and kind of just trying to escape. And I was pointing the finger at everybody except myself, right? I was like, this coach isn't giving me a chance. The strength coach, you know, doesn't like me being in the weight room, doesn't give me an opportunity to like get stronger. The head coach doesn't like me. The trainers, you know, don't even give me like ice when I want to go in the training room. And so I started pointing the finger at everybody else, and I would just go home and escape and just blame everybody else. And it came to the point where week 15 or 16, the season was almost over. They ended up calling me into the coach's office. And I don't know if anybody's if you've ever seen Hard Knocks where they like cut people. So I knew what was happening. They're taking me in there to cut me.
Yeah.
And it was like this big wake up call. And I went up there and they ended up, telling me they're going to release me. And I was kind of prepared for it. So it was the first time I really like stood up for myself. And I was like, you know what? Like, I know I'm going to be on the streets. Like, I'm going to speak my mind. And I basically told them, because there wasn't really good communication between what was expected of me. And that's kind of, I mean, in the NFL, you got to figure it out yourself or you'll be on the streets. And so there's this big wake up call for me. I was like, dang, like, I'm going to be on the streets without a job. And everybody else that I was pointing the finger at is going to be doing their thing. They're not going to think twice. Like, yeah. They're not going to care. They're not going to be like, oh, yeah, Joe, like, I screwed him over. Like, they're just going to continue on with their life, living their dream. And I want to be on the streets. And it was this huge realization where I was like, I can't rely on anybody else to get me to where I want to be. So I ended up like speaking my mind, talking to them. And then they ended up having a guy that went on IR. So they ended up keeping me. I ended up talking myself into them keeping me.
No shit.
Yeah. And so they're like, you know, we're going to keep you. The big reason was, I think, because they brought in a new guy. And I basically told him we were in the number one seed that year going into the playoffs. And I said, if the starting center got hurt, would you trust me in there or would you trust this new guy to go in there? And I think me saying that triggered like, okay, when it comes down to it, like, we really, who do we want out there, our team rely yeah. on? Like, it was me. So they ended up keeping me. And then 2 weeks later when we were in the playoffs, I ended up was dressing. And so, and then the next year, I went in and I had to like compete real hard, ended up not getting the starting job again, even though I outplayed the guy. And so I've had a lot of ups and downs, but that was the big kind of turning point in my whole career. I'm so thankful that it happened because that whole next year, basically the next 5 years of my career, I didn't rely on anybody. Like if a coach came into me and told me one thing, I'm like, no, like this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
This is what I need to do to be where I'm at. And that's kind of where the NFL is like, you got to take ownership for who you are because there's so many moving parts. And like even coaches, like a head coach, you know, the average length for a head coach is a couple years. If they don't stick or they have a couple bad seasons,
right.
They're out, the whole staff changes. But if you're still there, you got to have something that anchors you to who you are, your work ethic and what you do. You can't rely on anybody else to get you to where you want to be.
So it sounds like even though like it's a massive organization from ownership down, but it really sounds what I'm hearing from you, like insiders, really it's like an individuality still within the team structure.
Yeah.
So what woke you up to, you know, make you speak your mind? Like what was it that like got to that last point? You're like, I got nothing else to lose here.
It was the fact that I knew I was going to be on the streets and I wanted to, I don't know. I felt like I wasn't getting enough respect.
Yeah.
And you know, they didn't communicate with me well, like what was expected. So they were saying like, you know, I don't know, just knowing that I was gonna be on the streets, like I was like, if I'm gonna be on the streets, like this is, I'm out of here. So I'm gonna speak my mind on the way out. So, and I'm so glad I did. And I know that takes, you know, a lot of guts because it was probably one of the biggest conversations. Like the GM was sitting there and the head coach.
Yeah, of an NFL organization team.
An NFL organization. And most people just take that, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm not good enough, this, that. And, you know, I was like, no, like I am good enough to be here. And I don't feel like I was getting a fair shot. And I was like, if you guys would have let me know what I need to do, like, and then when they ended up keeping me, I like went and sat down with the GM. I was like, what do I need to do to like show you guys that I can do this?
Yeah.
You
know, what did they say?
He was just saying, I need to get bigger, stronger, need to have like practice better. Basically all the things that the little things that I was like kind of showing attitude, like I'm better than this.
Yeah.
Which at that time I was like, oh, like it was kind of childish of me, right? It was like this attitude, but that was the victim mentality. And I see that now, even like some players, like it's just that little subtle like attitude where it's like, you know, I don't like, I'm better than this, or they're not giving me a good enough opportunity, or they don't care about me. And just shifting that, like they notice that stuff. And so shifting that to like, I don't care what they think, like I'm going to bring my best every day.
Yeah.
And then once I shifted that attitude, they took notice, and they ended up like that whole next couple years were like, yo, Joe, like we really see an improvement. Like, and it was just because I would go into work every day with that mindset. Like I'm going to be better than I was yesterday, and ended up getting a starting job 2 years later, my fifth year. And it was like my first year. I finally won the starting job, like worked all the way back. And then the fourth game of the year, that's when I blew my knee out.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
So would you say that like all that pain and frustration that got built up was actually really like the catalyst and turning point for your career in the NFL?
100%. Without that lesson, I would not have played as long as I have. And, you know, even when I blew my knee out, ended up getting cut from the Falcons a year later because it's 11-month recovery on my right. I blew my ACL, MCL out.
See the scar right here.
Yeah, double-headed. Get them both repaired at the same time, which is like a rare thing. And they said it's an 11-month recovery, and training camp started after 9 months. So my knee was still like kind of healing, but I would like slowly start getting back into the things. And so to start a training camp, I went into started training camp as a starter. And by the last preseason game, I was third string, and then they cut me. And it was just like this slow downhill thing. And it was like nothing I could do because my knee was just wasn't right.
Yeah.
And so they ended up like damaged goods in the NFL. Like, all right. And so I had this chip on my shoulder after that happened. Like, okay, I'm going to go prove these guys wrong again.
Yeah.
And luckily, Tampa Bay, they needed a backup center guard. And my old offensive coordinator, Dirk Cutter, who ended up being the head coach there for a couple of years, had just gotten fired from Atlanta and went to Tampa. And so he called me up. He's like, and he was the guy that saw me. He knew that I was like, had the right kind of stuff and makeup. And he's like, hey, we need a backup. I don't know if there's other opportunities for you to be a starter, but there's definitely an opportunity for you to be a backup here. And so I kind of didn't have any other opportunities because all the teams were set.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to go. I know this guy. And so basically went from making like starter money to minimum money with incentives. If I became a starter, I would make it. And ended up going there week two. The first game I was there, the starter rolled his ankle. I ended up starting the next two seasons full the whole time. And it ended up being the best thing that ever happened to me.
Wow.
So it's kind of crazy how the universe works and guides you. And, you know, some things might look like they're bad at the time.
Yeah.
But the lessons that they provide can be life-altering, right?
Totally. So on that question, on that note, what you just shared, then how important is mental mind mastery within, you know, for playing in the level? I mean, you play at the pinnacle. Mm-hmm. How important is like to master the mind?
Yeah, it's really everything. There's a few individuals that are so athletically gifted and talented naturally that they can get by.
Yeah. Right?
They can get by in the NFL, and some of them get paid a lot of money just because they're so like I've known a couple linemen who are so incredibly big, strong, gifted physically, long arms, and they can just get it done, but they don't have that, like, you know, attitude where it's like, I'm gonna, like, nobody's gonna beat me ever. But they're still so good that it's like, it's hard to find an individual like that. So the team still, but the majority of guys, if you don't have that attitude, that mental strength that separates you, like, there's so many talented people, gifted people, athletic people, that you're just not going to make it. And you got to set yourself aside. Like every year in training camp, there's always, so there's 53 guys on the team. Every year when training camp starts, it goes up to 90. And so there's a bunch of rookies, a bunch of new guys come in. And I remember when I was younger, our offensive coordinator he said, what are you going to do to stand out? Like, what are you going to do? You got to do something to stand out, especially if you're a college free agent coming in. Like nobody, like the rosters are pretty much set in the NFL. Like, the teams know, and there's always this like one or two guys that come out and they're just ball out, like making plays left or right. And it's, you got to have such a focus and a drive to stand out, and like an attitude of I don't care what people think, because there's always, the veterans are always like, you know, they don't want you to be too good because then you're going to take their job,
right?
Like they'll support you and stuff, but then there's these guys, and then once you start earning their respect, because you're like, I don't care. Like, I'm not trying to let you have it. Like, I'm trying to come get it.
Mm-hmm.
Then all the veterans start respecting you. And they're like, okay, this guy can like really help us win games. And so there's this like, you got to be so strong and focused to go in there. And it's a tough environment. And there's, you know, all of these other guys, older guys, are all so mentally strong and tough. And so to fit into that and to like kind of become a part of that tribe is – it's difficult, but once you do it, it's like such a good feeling.
Yeah, it sounds intense. Mm-hmm. So what's like an insider secret? Like, I think we're getting a lot here, but like what's something like the fans who watch the NFL wouldn't know about, like really what like goes on with like inside the dynamics of the game? Like anything interesting you could share on that like people would find intriguing?
You know, I don't think all fans think this, but I think a lot of fans, you know, they play Madden and the video game, and they think that a lot of us just show up on Sundays and play, right?
Yeah.
But there is so much that goes into it. It's a 24/7 job, and that's one of the reasons I ended up walking away, because it's so difficult. Like, you have to make sure you're big enough, strong enough, weigh enough, eat the right stuff, get enough sleep. You know, our schedule is so intense. Like, we play on Sundays, and then Mondays we go in, watch the film, work out. Tuesdays, workout, recovery, massage. And then Wednesdays, it's straight full pads practice. We're there from 6 to 6. Same with Thursday. Friday's like a half day. And then Saturday's travel and walkthrough, and then we're back at it. And, you know, playing 60 to 80 plays in a game as an offensive lineman, it tears your body so up. It's insane. And so you wake up on Mondays like so sore, so you're spending the whole day trying to get your body back, getting sleep, getting rest. And then Tuesday, usually it's always the second day that you're even more sore, so you're trying to do recovery and massage. And then by the time your like body's just starting to get back, you go Wednesday full pads practice. You're installing the next team, which is a whole nother game plan, and you have to study the opponent. I mean, we're watching, you know, 3 to 5 hours of film a day trying to get ready for the next opponent. Not only schemes, plays, but actually the individual opponents, what kind of blitz package they run. And it's just a lot. There's a lot that goes into it, and it's not easy at all. And it's, you know, a lot of people, it's so funny when I like watch games, I don't really watch a lot of football anymore. I'm kind of like distancing myself from it. For now, I'm sure I'll get back into it once I kind of get a little bit of a break.
Yeah.
But watching it with people and like, you know, how they criticize and like, you know, there's so much time and effort that goes into this. It's not like they show up and like are just calling random plays. Like, there's so much, and some are better than others. Like, obviously, like Bill Belichick and the Patriots are just, you know, men among boys playing with, like, they're just that much better.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's so much that goes into it. So it's pretty insane.
What's some of the, like, what type of, like, I'm sure you had to make some really challenging choices about like personal life as training. Like, what's the like off season, like, what does that look like as far as the training goes, the type of sacrifices, and maybe not call them sacrifices, just decisions you made to maybe brush off other things to solely focus on the NFL?
I would say there's definitely sacrifices and, you know, commitments that you have to make.
Yeah.
The great thing about the NFL is the off season is amazing. Like, we have 2.5-3 months completely off. So it's kind of like, that's different than most jobs, right? Like, it's so heavily intensive, like 24/7, like during the season, you don't have any time off. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden you have 3 months off.
Yeah.
So, you know, the first month or so, you don't do anything. Like, you really, like, you're so beat up. Like, you're literally just in bed, like trying to recover because your body's so beat up. And then you slowly start, you know, I started doing some yoga, getting my body back, kind of getting the movement. And then you got to start training again because you don't want to lose all that strength.
Right.
Weight. So you literally start training again after you kind of get your body back. But you do take some time to travel, go see family, do some things that you didn't really get the opportunity to do that you sacrificed during the season.
Right.
Like, you know, Christmas, holidays, like that's all during the season. We don't get to go home.
Yeah.
Like on Christmas, every day, my whole 8 years, like we worked. Like every day, and Thanksgiving same. And if we had, like, sometimes we play games on those days.
Yeah.
So you make sacrifices not being able to do things normal people do, but then you kind of take advantage of that during the time off, and then you start back up again. And, you know, every year, if you're not fully invested in it, then there's always in the back of your mind that someone else is going to take your job. Like, are you going to make the team? I mean, there's, you know, the guys you hear about on ESPN, like the top 10% of the league, the guys making all the money.
Yeah.
You know, the superstars, like the guys that don't go to OTAs, and, you know, you hear about them, like, oh, I mean, those guys are fine.
Yeah.
And they're so talented. And I mean, they still work hard. Some of the best are still, like, really savage.
Someone like workers. Brady,
like, even like Julio, like a lot of receivers, like prima donnas, they get like bad raps, like Antonio Brown.
Yeah. Right?
But like Julio Jones is one of the hardest working dudes I've ever met. And he's one of the most athletically gifted humans ever. So, like I was talking about earlier in the show, some of these guys are so talented that they don't really need to work hard. Like Julio could go there and just like scoop by if he wanted and still probably be a top 10 receiver. But he goes and attacks each day like he wants to be the absolute best. So when you get guys that are that talented with that kind of mindset,
yeah,
like those are the superstars that are the game changers, right? And so it's really beautiful to like I remember like when I was in even Atlanta and when I was in Tampa, and I'd see like Mike Evans, you know, go up and make like the Sports Center top 10 catch in practice, and I'm just like, what is that? And he'd like do it consistently. And I just realized, like, I forget that I'm playing with the best in the world,
yeah, yeah.
Right? And it's just, like, so amazed, like, in awe and, like, grateful that I am able to be a part of it, you know, and play with these amazing athletes. It's pretty incredible.
And then you end up at the Bucks. You end up starting. Kind of take us – I mean, you retired from the Bucks just in 2018, right?
So, 2017.
2017.
Been a year and a half. This is my second season not playing.
Okay. So did you, if you wanted to, could you have continued to play? Because it sounds like.
Yeah, I could have pushed through. I mean, I have quite a bit of injuries that are starting to mount up.
Yeah.
Obviously my knee, my right knee, my ACL, MCL, ever since that happened, my body kind of has been trying to overcorrect. So like, it's kind of falling apart. I got torn labrums in both my shoulders. I dislocated my left knee twice, and I have a bulging disc in my neck. But yeah, I could have pushed through all that
because
I had been pushing through it, but I sat back and I kind of reevaluated. I saw this documentary a couple years ago called The Minimalist, and I really was intrigued by like the minimalism kind of concept of not needing a lot of things. And I you know, had a little bit of money saved, and I started realizing, like, you know, a lot of people sacrifice their youth and their health to try and make money.
Yeah.
And then as they get older, their bodies start breaking down. They sacrifice all their money to try and get some youth and health back. Right.
Yeah.
And so I had this realization, like, when's enough enough? Like, you know, and I have a lot of friends, like one of my buddies last year had double hip surgery. And he's played 10 years and he's made plenty of money and he kept trying to play, you know? And so I think it's not just the fact that people are trying to get more money. I mean, it's hard to walk away from millions of dollars, but it's like that some of them don't know what else to do. Like, that's all they know is football.
Yeah.
And I was ready to experience other parts of life, and I do miss parts of football, but I'm so excited about the experiences I have ahead of me, and I want to experience like all the different things. And I'm very grateful for the opportunities that football has blessed me with, and, you know, financially, and, you know, it's crazy how much people love football, and it's opened a lot of doors for me.
I bet.
But I'm going to take advantage of that, and I'm going to try and, you know, make a difference and share a positive message and go experience the world. I mean, there's so much out in this world to experience.
Totally. So what was really like the defining decision of like what you felt called for the next dream now that you're, you know, after and in?
I don't think I knew what it was when I first walked away.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like, oh, I want to go do this now. It was, my body's beat up. I don't want to sacrifice my health anymore. What else is there? And the first thing I wanted to experience was freedom from football, because over the last couple of years, like, as much like I loved playing on Sundays, the pure competition and getting into flow state and really like being able to go and compete at the highest level and being good and like locking people down and competing with my buddies, like, that was so much fun. I love that. But there was like 90% of the game was just so exhausting. And so it was like this slow thing where it's like, I kind of can't wait to get out of this. Right. And so when I was done, I was ready. But even though I was ready, I still wasn't ready for like this kind of this physical void, like something was missing. I was like, whoa, that's strange. Like after the last season was over, and I was like, I'm not playing anymore. This is it. Like, I was like, dang, even though I like wanted to walk away and I was walking on my own terms, there was like this physical void. I was like, what is that? That's weird.
Yeah.
So that's why I decided, like, you know, I needed to go do something. So that's why I bought the van, rescued my pup Freedom, and we hit the road. I was like, I just want to go travel and like see this country and not have anything to do, anyone to see, no agenda. And, you know, I felt kind of like a lot of people wish they could do that and wish they could have the opportunity. So I was like, you know what, I'll start a little blog and kind of share my experience for people that can't do it. And then I was going to do it for a few months, and then it kind of took off, and like I started getting a following, and people started reaching out to me, telling me how inspired they were by what I was sharing. And so that me experiencing my freedom and going and traveling, like while I was on the road the last year and a half, like I learned so much about myself and who I am and what it's like to get outside my comfort zone and meeting new people and inspiring them with what I've learned and sharing what I've learned. And it's kind of led and grown into like what I want to do next. Right. Yeah. And so now I feel like I'm being called to kind of get into motivational speaking, sharing my message, sharing the lessons I've learned through football and on the road, and actually want to work on paying it forward to athletes too. That's kind of what I'm working on now, is trying to set up some kind of community to help specifically NFL players for now, but eventually athletes transition from the sport into the real world, and giving them the tools, techniques, support to help guide them and give them tools. Because a lot of guys, what I've learned is in my own transition, like I've handled it pretty well because I've been able to go experience this, but a lot of people are lost and they don't know. And like I said before, like I was walking away on my own terms and I still felt this void. And I was like, what is that? But since I walked away on my own, I was prepared for it, went out, tried to experience something else and fill that void. And what I've learned is filling it with community is the best way. And a lot of athletes, they don't have the opportunity to walk away on their own terms, right? It's usually taken away from them. Yeah. They usually get hurt, don't make it as far as they wanted, don't get drafted, all that. So I want to be able to provide the tools and let them know that the mindset that they develop and the lessons they learn through sports is puts them a leg up in the real world.
Yeah.
You know, like most people don't know what it's like to push themselves outside their comfort zone and to learn and grow and push all the way to failure and not give up, and then learn and grow and learn and grow. And having that base foundation of what it's like to push yourself, transfer into the real world, like you can accomplish anything you want in life. And I kind of want to share that.
I love that. What's one of the major discomforts of that you have faced on the road?
Fear. Fear of the unknown. You know, I didn't know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend that was doing the van life.
And, yeah.
You know, it's kind of low leverage. Like I didn't really, I had money saved. Like a lot of people that do this, you know, they got to make money on the road and stuff. So I had a little bit of money saved. So it wasn't a huge deal, but it was like, I'd never done it before. And I was by myself and, you know, I was worried about being lonely or where to go, where I was going to stay, and doing it anyway. And like going to places, there's plenty of times that I'd go to places and not really know anybody, go to a city and not know anybody. And I say all the time, what a time to be alive, where I had like Instagram. I just put it out on Instagram, like, hey, I'm in the city. What is there to do? And people will tell me, and so yeah. I go experience it. And it led to so many different synchronicities. And like some of my really good friends that I have now, I've met on the road.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And just randomly. And some through Instagram, some just randomly. And, you know, like for a specific example, I was up in Northern California, San Fran, and I did a lot of baseball games. So that was one thing, I like met people. I went to like 20 different stadiums.
Oh, cool.
This last year, which was awesome. So I go to baseball games, but I was up there going to a Giants game. And then someone reached out and was like, hey, there's a yoga festival in Tahoe, which is a few hours away. Why don't you go check it out? And so I was like, you know, I'm getting really into yoga, trying to take care of my body after football. I was like, I'll go check that out. So I went there and it wasn't really exactly what I thought it would be. And I was like really kind of uncomfortable. And I remember calling my sister and be like, yeah, like I'm not into this. Like, I think I'm just going to go like camp somewhere. And she's like, you know, this is what the trip's all about. Like getting outside your comfort zone. Like, this is what you wanted. Like, why don't you stick there and stick it out? So I ended up like, you know, you're right. So I ended up going to like the yoga class and meeting some people, and a couple of them are like my really good friends still. And had a really good time. So just like stories like that, where even if I was feeling uncomfortable and like kind of leaning into that discomfort, led to some really beautiful relationships and experiences.
So would you say leaning into that discomfort has really been the thing that's opened up like these great opportunities for you?
Yeah.
Your path?
I would say on the other side of fear lies freedom. So I've learned that fear is a guidepost, and a lot of people like being in their comfort zone, and they don't ever experience what it's like to kind of overcome their fears.
Yeah.
And that's what's kind of ironic, is like one of my biggest fears is public speaking. And it has been my whole life. And I had a couple experiences when I was a kid where I like had to speak in front of the class, froze, everybody laughed at me, right? So it's like this really big kind of trauma that like holds me back. And so I've been working through that, and like now I'm feel like I'm being called to be like a public speaker, right? And so the easy thing would be like, no, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
But you know, there's opportunities that they still scare me. I've obviously gotten a lot more comfortable with speaking and speaking my truth and being in front of people, but there's still this like this block I've been working through, and I've been leaning into it. And that's different for everybody. And it could be because of different traumas when you're a kid.
Yeah.
But that's all they are, just stories that we tell ourselves.
Exactly.
They're self-limiting beliefs that we can't do something. And if we can overcome those fears and like lean into them and become fearless and realize that if there's nothing to be scared of, you can literally accomplish and do and be anything you want to be. And yeah, that's kind of what I'm sharing, and I'm living too.
I love that. I believe the same mindset and philosophy that where the fear lies is where your flowers blossom. Yeah, that's awesome, man. So what's like a really share like a cool experience that you had on the road? Like I know you've been to 20 different ballparks this past year. What's like one that's really like kind of memorable to you?
Oh, I eventually think I'm going to write a book because there's so many good experiences.
Yeah.
And so many different experiences. But I'll share kind of the beautiful thing about, you know, a lot of people ask me whether I plan or do I just go? And I always like to keep it open. So the way I would plan is if, you know, I know people kind of all over the country. And so I would have different places I want to either see or people I wanted to visit. So I would kind of like, you know, 2 weeks from now I'm in Texas and I have a wedding in California. So I'm going to eventually get to there. And so I kind of just slowly mosey my way on through. So I'd have like these points every couple weeks or months that I needed to be. So then I would drive and like find places and just keep it really open. And the reason I did that is because I wanted to let the universe kind of guide me and not like have such a rigid plan. Cause I feel like when people have a rigid plan, if it doesn't go as planned, then it just kind of screws everything up and adds another stress level. So being open to the whole experience.
Yeah.
So back to when I was in San Fran, I didn't really know anybody there. I wanted to go to a couple of Giants game, experience the city. So I put it out on Instagram. One of my good buddies, brother's best friends, who I had met like one time years ago, reached out. I was like, hey, like I'll go to the game with you. So I ended up going to a game with him, hanging out with him for a couple of days, met a few other people. It was a lot of fun. And I was like, yeah, I need to go to Denver. I'm going to the mountains with a couple of buddies doing a rafting trip in like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But I don't have anywhere to go between that. Like, where should I go? He's like, oh, my cousin. So I got to start heading that way. So he's like, my cousin lives in Nevada City, which is a few hours away. Why don't you go there? I'm like, okay. So I never met his cousin. Drive to Nevada City. I'm like, what's up, dude? Like, and he's like, yeah, come stay at my house. So I go stay at random guy's house. Cousins of a buddy's brother's best friend.
Yeah.
And end up staying with them for like 3 days. They show me around Nevada City, like super good people. We go down to the river and they like kind of, I get to experience Nevada City. And then I was like, yeah, I'm going, you know, to Colorado. Like, what is there doing? He's like, oh, you should go to Jackson Hole. There's the Grand Tetons, which I had never heard. Grand Tetons National Park is beautiful. You'll love it. So I'm going up through there and I spent like 4 or 5 days there at a campsite. And it's like the most epic, like beautiful place I've ever been.
Were there in the winter or the summer?
I was there in the summer.
Okay, cool.
And it was amazing. And so I like never would have got to experience that if I didn't just kind of trust the flow, right? And ended up driving through Wyoming down and ended up experiencing that. So that's just a little story of like staying open, meeting people that I have no idea who they are. And that's another thing you realize on the road is, you know, the media portrays such a divisive like country, right?
Yeah.
And like the politics and all that BS. But in reality, like everybody's so similar, you know, and it's like we don't have to, you know, hate each other for different beliefs. That's all they are is belief systems, right? Like universal truths are true for everybody. And experiencing that by meeting different people on the road and like how much love everybody has and how much everybody wants to help the majority of people. And it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, totally. People just want to have enjoy their experience while they're here.
Exactly.
What's it like living? I know you have your van's pretty fucking souped up.
Yeah. Badass.
But what's it like living like so minimal, like everything inside that van?
Yeah, it's,
I'm sure you went from a nice house out in Tampa.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was getting kind of lost in the rat race, in the chase, yeah. Right? And you know, I was making a couple $1 million a year, mm-hmm. and got to the point where I was looking at the guy next to me, and he's making $10 million a year.
Yeah,
and I'm like, well, why am I not making that much money? And like, I kind of took, that's kind of the process of when I took a step back. It's like, dang, like, when is enough enough? Like, even if I'm making millions of dollars a year, like, there's still someone always making more. And so you kind of, if you don't have balance with that, you're always going to be chasing it. And so like, when am I going to be content with mm-hmm. what I have and not put all my value in that? And that's when I decided, you know what, I want to experience what life is like without all of this, right? Without chasing more. And so when I hit the road, I gave away all my furniture in my apartment. I didn't want to pay for storage. So I gave it away to charity. I gave away like 70% of my closet. Like, if it didn't fit in my van, I wasn't going to take it. And like, when I got rid of it all, literally like a physical weight was lifted off my shoulders. Like, I felt lighter. I felt more free. And I don't think people realize like how much stuff and clutter takes up space, you know, not just like physical space, mm-hmm. but like in your mental space as well too. And so that freedom of getting rid of everything and being able to just like go and explore and experience and not feeling weighed down is, it's a beautiful gift. And I'm so grateful for it. And like, I love it so much. Like, now I don't need a lot of things. Like, you know, I like spending money on food. Like, I like going to restaurants and
yeah.
buying good food, good quality food, and the experiences. And that's what I choose to spend my money on. Like, I don't need a lot of nice things to be happy. I do like nice things.
Right. But, your van's nice.
The van's nice. The van's really nice. And I'm very grateful that I can afford such a nice van. But yeah, it's all about finding that balance.
How did it go from millions to no contract on the mind? How was that? I'm just curious on that transition.
I think,
you know, as entrepreneurs, there's athletes, artists, you know, and musicians are on tour. It's like all the money on tour, then.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it's this belief in yourself and having an abundance mindset.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly, truly believe I want to make more money outside of football than I ever did in. And I've made a lot of money in football.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a belief in myself and going and conquering my fears and creating. You know, my dream now is to create companies and co-create and, you know, companies that are help serve the world and make mm-hmm. the world a better place. And I don't know exactly what all those look like, but I know there's a lot of opportunity. And, you know, believing in that, you know, I've always had a good trust in myself and the abundance and being taken care of. And I think it's because I don't need a lot and not attaching to it. And a lot of people, when they attach to needing a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
then they feel like there's not enough to go around.
Right.
It's a scarcity mindset. And if someone else is getting theirs, then I'm missing out on mine. But even if I don't make the money like I say, I feel like I believe I can.
Right.
Like, I'm not attached to it.
Yeah.
And I think having that non-attachment creates a flow that the universe kind of will provide for you.
Yeah, yeah.
When you need it, and trusting that, and knowing that, like, I'm never gonna be in a bad spot. Like, I'm gonna be fine. You know, like, I'm gonna be taken care of. If I lose all my money tomorrow, like, deep down, who I am, I know who I am. I'm gonna be fine, and there's gonna be opportunity, and I'll be taken care of, and there's people that love me. So like, it's just this trust. Like, I don't need it, so that yeah. it flows.
Sounds like your mind is full of like self-love and appreciation, but a momentary bank drop is not it's not the end all be all.
It's all impermanent, right?
Yeah.
Like, life is impermanent. Like, everything that we love, that we have in this world right here, in, you know, 100 years, 200 years, is not going to be here anymore.
Exactly. It's just transformation.
It's all impermanent, not attaching. I mean, even relationships, I think a lot of people, you know, I went through a pretty serious breakup. I was engaged, and you know, I'm very grateful for that relationship
yeah.
and the purpose it served, and it helped me grow a ton. But I think a lot of people attach to those relationships, right?
And oh, yeah.
They don't honor them when it's time to move on and grow and learn, and you've learned the lessons. And so even with relationships, they're impermanent.
Yeah.
And being able to, like, let people go and still love and, you know, it's all part of the journey.
How long were you guys engaged for?
We were engaged for a year, together for 5 years. And, you know, we just just grew apart. We were young when we met, so we, you know.
Like, was that why you were in the NFL?
While I was in the NFL, yep. And she ended up, when I got cut from Atlanta, I met her in Atlanta. We moved to Tampa. And, yeah, I'm so grateful for the time we spent together.
Yeah.
But it was just, we just outgrew each other. And I learned a lot of lessons.
I bet.
Yeah. And so, yeah, and it's okay. It's okay not to attach to those things and move on and learn the lessons and grow. And I think the attachment part is the, it's a part that gets people in trouble.
Yeah.
Attaching to everything.
Oh, man.
Attaching to money, attaching to your nice car, your job. I mean, it's all transient. And like, you know, like I said earlier, a lot of people, if they, like, let's say they lose their job, you know, they get so caught up in like, oh my God, my life's over. But mm-hmm. in reality, if you can change your mindset and look at it as an opportunity,
right?
You know, the universe is
closing something
to open up something else. And if you trust that it's all going to work out, then it usually leads to an even better opportunity.
Yeah.
Like when I got cut from Atlanta, I was on the streets after my fifth year, and I still hadn't made any real money to be retired yet.
Yep.
And so I was like, oh crap. And there was a part of me that was like upset, right? I was distraught. I was going to have to find a new team, go to a new city. And it was like a lot of unknown and scary. But I had this deep trust that it was all going to work out. And literally, I got to Tampa the first week the guy got hurt. I ended up starting. And like, I was just like, I remember having this moment of like, wow, like this all happened for me, not to me. Like,
yeah.
This is exactly what I needed. A new start, a fresh start. And it was all like, it's all perfect.
I love that. I love that. That's a great way to wrap this up. So for people who want to follow you, let's throw those out here.
Yeah, I'm mostly active on social media, on Instagram at manvandogblog. I have a website, manvandogblog.com. And if you want to email me, it's joe.mvdb@gmail.com. And I'd love to hear from anybody that wants to reach out and share their story.
Yeah, awesome. We'd definitely appreciate having you on the show today, my man.
Yeah.
Any last parting words for like a little sneak peek of what you're up to, what you're in the mix of, what's next for Joe?
Yeah, you can follow me and keep in contact. A lot of big things ahead. Like I'm just getting started.
Yeah.
A lot to experience and a lot to share and a lot of love to give. And I'm really excited about the future. I'm in a little bit of a transition. I obviously just came to Austin for a few months working on a few new projects. Definitely going to be traveling a lot, but I think I'm going to be transitioning more into sharing my message and be more, I'm excited about it.
Awesome. Well, it's great to be able to get your message on this platform and to get it out to more people, and fucking definitely super inspiring to hear, man. So I really appreciate your time today.
Thanks for that.
Thank you for coming on the show, brother. I appreciate it.
Yep.